Sheldon at the time of the planning.
No, I can go back to that. Doesn't it say sort of that it's like,
see guys, we don't, congratulations, you gave them a full, and then they have some story. That's, then you have, we have a friend of death guy, that I heard.
I don't know, I was trying to find the right answer.
My son, he's probably the assistant manager of the Riverside, he's at Hudson, the stadium they have, Hudson High School for the baseball is unbelievable.
Is that right?
They have seats for the fans, oh my gosh, and they have a church in, it's Hudson, high school.
Well, they park community games there too, they're using a uniform.
Did you say?
I did, yes, I did. Yeah, that's such a feeling.
I did.
Okay, Chris, I'll get them.
I did.
I will get them, yeah, I don't know.
Amanda.
And I didn't miss those, I did. But no, no.
Okay.
First one has to wear on.
Thank you so much, I'll make sure she gets it.
We have them.
There you go. There's a big, what, on you, it's a solid, you know, stuff.
Thank you, kids, really.
Yes, we want one, we want.
Oh, and the kids, yeah. The body, yeah.
Okay, that's one, so. I just kind of buy one, so.
Cool, it's fine, I'm sure, Levi's, you're very emotional, I'm the ones. You're very, I guess, I mean, this is, I'm a little worried, like, they don't show you love crimes.
There is a risk.
Yes, and it's, I'm just, I'm like, all this is very anger.
Oh, I like. I'm like, yeah, all.
Yeah, it's slightly fun. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not, I've got a Senate president, that's, yes, it's. Yeah, he's not a governor.
We don't think all of these, these states are having problems, so. They're legalized.
Are we ready?
Just about, maybe, that's right.
A water.
A water, oh, yeah.
Please.
Anybody else?
Thank you.
They all.
Thank you.
Fine, yes. Guys, Debbie, I think we're ready then.
Recording in progress.
Well, welcome everyone to the May 23rd council workshop. I apologize, I had to deliver some documents and everything, and probably it's gonna be a few minutes late here. But Debbie, would you please call the roll?
Sure, DeGeronimo?
Here.
Grindel?
Here.
Tagliati?
Here.
Tracus?
Present.
Baverka?
Here.
Welch Adowitz?
Here. Well, welcome everyone, we do have some legislation to deal with first before we get to our discussion of the snow plowing program, and I see Ron and Emily are here for that, so we'll get to that momentarily. But we will start off with the second reading, and it's ordinance number 2023-41. It's authorizing the mayor to enter into a change order number one to the 2022 asphalt road maintenance and repairs contract with Roniak Paving in amount not to exceed $775,467. Total contract amount not to exceed $1,856,435.15.
A title only?
Second. All clear?
Aye.
Aye.
An ordinance authorizing change order number one to the city's 2022 asphalt road maintenance and repairs contract with Roniak Paving.
Do And this was discussed at the Streets and Sidewalks meeting that we had. And even though I don't think we really settled on this money as far as the exact projects or work to be done, but we wanted, I think, Don, I think the main thing was we wanted to take advantage of pricing from the contract. And at future meetings under your guys' day, we'll discuss as far as what projects need to be, you know, that you would recommend, and that we get the report from Anakin Smith, hopefully be able to put this money to good use on projects. But hopefully the summer's going to be ramping up here, everything. So hopefully we'll get that report and have another Streets and Sidewalks meeting soon.
If we did get the report, it was in its infancy, right? It wasn't completely
perfect. Right. Don did go over conditions.
So. Can you send that out, Don, to everyone?
Sure.
Thank you.
All right. Do we have a motion for this ordinance?
I move that we approve the ordinance.
Second. Moved by Jim Drakus, second by Chris Walchanowicz. Debbie, call the roll, please.
DeGeronimo?
Yes.
Grindel?
Yes.
Tagliati?
Yes.
Drakus?
Aye.
Viverka?
Yes.
Walchanowicz?
Yes.
Very good. So ordinance number 2023-41 has been approved. We go to first reading, and this is ordinance number 2023-60, an ordinance fixing the compensation of council members and the vice mayor in the city of Independence. And we did receive that.
I love it.
Right. We have a
second.
Or we have a motion and a second. Now, as far as the legislation goes,
an ordinance fixing the compensation of council members and the vice mayor in the city of Independence.
And we do have the ordinance in front of the court, minus whatever the recommendation would be. This would be a topic of discussion for future workshops or before the next meeting. As far as I go back, it's the last time it was changed was the year that I got first elected in 2000. So it's been 1999 was the election, so it's been 24 years since the last time that this has been modified one bit. So a lot of changes have happened since then. As far as the job's concerned, as far as the what 10,000 was 20 to 24 years ago as compared to what it is now. So again, it's something that probably is, you know, well overdue to look at, besides also the next legislation regarding the mayor's compensation, which has been, I think, the mayor, that was changed a little more recently. I think that was 2012 that was, so but still that amount of 75,000, again, 11 years have gone by since that was changed, so.
Mr. Vice Mayor, I would recommend that, you know, we work together to survey similar sized communities, both in terms of budget and population, to survey what all of these compensation ordinances,
right,
to see, you know, if there's some trends that we see. There's also benefits associated with them, so we should examine the benefit packages and discuss whether, you know, how about those. And then perhaps make, have us, you know, at our next meeting, we could examine those in the meantime and see what we think. I mean, with respect to the councilmatic pay, since 1960, Independence became a city in 1960, so I think the fact that we're still making $10,000 a year for the next council, certainly is not something where we're overly greedy or anything like that. I mean, it's certainly a minimal number, irrespective of the fact that people are struggling with inflation and everything. But I think at least taking a look at that and making recommendations, we might want to keep it the same. But I think the minimum for PERS to even consider being invested in the PERS system is $12,000, and that was changed in 2001 or two. So at least we could examine what other folks are getting in terms of both salary and benefits and see if there's any adjustments that should be made for both this and perhaps the mayor and the finance director as well. We all agree.
Isn't there a timeline when this has to be passed before this current election?
For it to take effect, if for the next group of people who are elected, I think, is it sometime in July? I don't know precisely when, but it's I think it's in July. So we'll have to talk to the law director about that. But it's according to the charter. I just don't know specifically what that is. But.
I know it would be considered sugar, the benefits, the health benefits is a big consideration that I know that I consider looking at that, because if it was just strictly $10,000, it'd be almost a hardship, really, if you have your own employment, which you have to do for your family. So it is that's a critical. We should examine other communities and see if they offer the same. So we're comparing the total package as far as that benefits as well as salary, and that goes too. So, but definitely is well overdue, and now's a good time to discuss that. And we'll keep that on first reading, is my understanding, and get more information regarding other communities that are like.
Is that something that we could task Amanda with, or?
Yes, we can. I believe that I may have that information already.
Very good, Gary. So the sooner we have that information, then the sooner we can have a discussion that's knowledgeable, and we're able to compare, all things as far as compensation goes, besides the salary, the benefit package too. So as soon as we have that, then we can make that available to the council. And likewise, we'll keep that a first reading, but we do have our June meeting coming up very, very soon. So
okay.
We'll keep that a first reading, and we'll move to ordinance number 2023-61.
Ty Lomond.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
An ordinance fixing the compensation of the office of mayor in the city of Independence.
And likewise, the same argument goes here. It doesn't go quite as far back as the pay for council and vice mayor, but still it goes back a number of years, probably three terms as far as that goes. It was this in play, Mayor, your last term that you had from your compensation.
Yeah, it's 2012.
Yeah.
It's 2012.
Yeah. So again, likewise, I think we have some of that information regarding the mayor's compensation, but it's again, that area, as thorough as we can, we'd like to review that, because again, we're taking personalities, taking the people that are currently in that position out, and we're looking at future potential candidates and also office holders, is that to try to entice that as good a candidates as you can. So we'll keep that on first reading too, and try to get as much information as we can. We move now to ordinance number 2023-62.
I move that this be read by title only as well.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
An ordinance requiring the position of finance director in the city of Independence to be full-time and establishing the compensation.
And yes, this is Jenny's legislation. Jenny, you can expound.
Thank you. Yes, I appreciate it. Thanks. So I've been thinking about this for a long time, and a couple things that I thought. So what this essentially does would make the job of the finance director a full-time position. I guess, you know, so I kind of go back to Del Suarez, Lou Ongers, George, obviously, John Barris, and now Vern Blaze. And having served with or observed every one of those individuals over the years, I can assure you that this is a full-time job. You know, I think that we have a situation where we have individuals who are willing to step up and run for office here in the community. But when you look at the requirements that we have in our charter, that the individual has to be either a finance background or has run a business or something like that, that's one prohibitive factor. So not everybody can run for this office. So you have to have some degree of resume in order to run for office. But with that requisite resume also comes the fact that these are usually individuals where when you look at the compensation of this part-time position, that it would be difficult to continue to get people to run for an office like that because of the pay in the private sector. So I'm not saying we should be paying what the private sector is paying. In fact, I don't recommend that. What I do think it is if someone is going to take that leave, at least it has to be attractive to them to stay in a full-time position. When you look at the Independence being a $50 million business, you look at overseeing not just the finances of the community, but a lot of the day-to-day operations. So we do hire a professional staff who are excellent, and they do a great job for us. But I think you need someone here full-time to be doing that. And we've had that de facto, in a way. Our finance directors really have been full-time since George, I think, pretty much, right, Mayor? You've been at City Hall almost the whole time, right? So, you know, you see how this position operates. The types of things that we have to get involved with, the questions through economic development that are involved, the public financing that we've had over the years with the bans and bonds, the amount of attention to detail you have to pay for with HR and personnel. Obviously, there's a lot of professionals around here to help, but ultimately, the director of finance is somebody who is here on a full-time basis. So I think we just need to recognize that reality that's been the case. And I think we also want to recognize that. I think we want to have this to be a full-time position, because if it's not a full-time position, and if someone really is just a sure part-timer, you know, do the taxpayers get their best opportunity out of them? That hasn't happened in our community, fortunately. But I think our jobs are to look for the future here. And if we really want to have a professional running the office, then you have to have a professional organization where it's a full-time position. And I think the finance director is significantly different in that they have to have the expertise to begin with, and they have to direct the operations of the office. So, you know, I just think it's time after all these years we've really de facto been doing this, but I think it's time to recognize that and be able to have to say that we do have a full-time position, a full-time professional, and someone who's always going to be working for the taxpayers. They've been doing that. I just think we should be recognizing what that reality is.
Yeah, and I to add to the gentleman, like you say, I besides being on council for these many years, I was on school board for 9 years and three of those years president. And I during that time, I don't remember when our treasurer left off. I mean, we had no treasurer. I was sitting in the treasurer's office writing checks and doing all kind of stuff. And and back then things weren't as critical, you know, or as complex as they are now, as back in the 80s. But that is so important. The finance director, so many people in this room, all the directors, the mayor, you're dependent on getting accurate information, projections. And if you had somebody in there that was not giving the information or giving counsel, you know, we have to make decisions on expenditures. If we're not getting the proper information and don't have a quality person in there and quality staff, the city would be in a lot of hurt. And I think I feel that we're blessed because Vern came in, and in fact, he was allowed to come in a few months earlier after he got elected, in the latest couple months. And we didn't miss a beat, and we have a wonderful staff there. Can't say enough about Maggie and that. But I mean, you know, directors and the mayor need answers. You need somebody to give you your accurate information. I'd have to research it yourself because you can't anymore. I think, Greg, I don't know if one time you kind of served. I think back, you served both roles for a few months too. And it's now to try to do that. Yeah, it is impossible. So we need, and again, it's a full-time job, like Jim stated, and compensation should be according to the responsibilities, and there's a great deal of responsibility in that position. So again, we need to discuss this and
bring this to the schools. We have not had a part-time treasurer of our schools since the 60s. We've had a full-time treasurer school district, and that's a much smaller budget.
So. And boy, when that person leaves, you know, everything's chaotic. I mean, I can remember that feeling back then. So it is critical. Your finance person is critical, whether it be school or whether it be the city. So that'll be on first reading. But again, I think that you provided some data that you with the finance, or I think that we saw some information regarding their compensation. So again, we'll have to study that. And Jim, I think your legislation speaks for itself as far as full time goes. So.
Okay. Just a question I had, trying to separate the ideas of compensation and full-time. What is the difference? To become full-time, I know Burns here all the time, what does that change?
Well, it's certainly for, so obviously all these positions are up for next year. So if anyone is going to pull positions and, you know, think about running for the finance director, that would mean they would have to commit to being a full-time employee of the city. So they would not be able to be a full-time employee of another organization and of the city of Independence.
Okay.
So the way we've structured it is that, you know, full-time employees are full-time employees. Now, full-time elected officials, it's a little bit different, right? You know, so it's, you know, that there's got to be there's no employee manual for a full-time elected official. So there is a nuance to that, which you correctly pointed out. But I think the vision is that it is a full-time position. So if anyone is contemplating, you know, running for this position, they would probably give notice to their employer that I'm running for this position and it would be a full-time job and I could not hold a second full-time job. So when I was a state agency director, the directorships had rules that said you're a full-time director and the only compensation you get outside would be like a board or a commission or something like that, or just a not-for-profit or something. So there were some rules set up for appointed non-elected officials. We don't have that in the city, but I think the intent, and we could certainly put that in here if we wanted to, we could come up with something if we'd like to, which might make some sense to do. But the intent is that this is a, you know, not just 9-to-5 job, but a full-time 9-to-5 type job, that you're not going to have significant outside employment. We don't want to hamper people to, you know, do whatever it is that they want to do, but it wouldn't be where I work for a, you know, a downtown CPA firm for, you know, half the day and come in half the day. And maybe that needs to be enumerated, you know.
And this one's a different, I think, than the other ordinances as far as the mayor and council. This one, it's full time, but it's still elected, and it really isn't that employer-employee relationship. I would still, in Vern's letter, I mean, as far as an appointed position, I think it makes a lot more sense. I know we didn't put that forward from the recommendation from the Charter Review Commission, but as far as putting an employee and at least having duties and responsibilities kind of established, overseeing, because I think the worst thing would be we make it a full-time position and we don't get the right person that's in there and could still get elected and you're kind of stuck. I mean, and you don't feel like you're, we've been fortunate with all the great finance directors, but we're not immune to look around the country. I mean, there's plenty of people that aren't delivering and, you know, can still get elected. So
that person can do a lot of damage in a short period of time.
And now they're full time, and now it's,
and maybe we should examine what that means. That's a very good idea while we're taking a look at it. Obviously, we're constrained by what the charter tells us to do, which is important. And I was even thinking that, you know, maybe this person should be able to have hiring authority, but the charter says no. So,
right, they've got the team, but they can't bring anybody in or get rid of them. So, you know, it's a big position, but they're really not.
I think there's some collaboration, though.
Yeah, yes.
George Weathers told me a story one time when he got elected lieutenant governor. He walked in, the lieutenant governor had three positions, and he had two people working in his office on the day he got sworn in. And he talked to Governor Rhodes. He says, who are these people? And they said, those are your new staffers. And he says, I don't get to pick my own staff. He says, welcome to state government, George.
Well, very good luck. Well, this is, again, on first reading, and it'll be part of the package of those three ordinances that we'll thoroughly discuss and then do some research in and get some research. A final piece of legislation is...
hang on for just one second.
Yeah, yeah.
So the way the duties of finance director are spelled out in charter, so if we have to, if the charter has to be amended, does that have to go to the voting populace?
Yes. Yes.
I just want to mention...
Yes.
Because that's what I would.
Yes. And to make it an appointed position, it would have to go to the appointing. Yeah.
So we could make a recommendation.
We could change. We can ask the voters to change the charter.
We could put on
every ball.
Charter review.
Right. But what I'm saying is, we can't make the rules on this, and we can set forth a proposal for the electorate to vote on.
No, this isn't in conflict with the charter, making it a full-time position. The charter's silent on whether or not it's full-time.
Just if we appoint.
It has been elected position.
It has been elected.
Yeah, if we want to appoint finance director, then you have to go through all that.
Right, that's in conflict.
Right.
With the charter. But making it full-time.
But just making.
The charter's silent is whether it's part-time or full-time.
Correct. Well, that could be done by ordinance, and we would not have to pass the voters to conversations by ordinance.
Right.
Council has that authority at a minimum.
Right.
You know, I'll say, our finance director, for the amount of hours and working with a $50 million budget, is vastly underpaid. So.
When you look at Independence's history with the state audits, we've had some great people working for us. And I mean, you look at around the state where the problems have been either, you know, through malfeasance or misfeasance, you know, it's always the finance department or purchasing that kind of gets you in trouble, you know. We've had none of that, and we've been very fortunate.
Very good. We'll move on. Anything else? We'll move on to resolution number 2023-4.
By title only?
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
A resolution supporting the city's tree commission's grant request to the Cuyahoga County Planning Commission and pledging matching funds for tree planting, planning, and a tree survey.
Our trees are.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, so the tree commission met last week. And there is a grant due by the 9th of June from Cuyahoga County Planning. Our biblical arborist over here helps us a lot with these things. But what we basically were looking at was a grant that could be in the amount of up to $50,000. We don't know what the grants might be. But one of the things that's said in the grant opportunity is that if your legislative body and the city or community or whoever is applying for this, if you would pass a resolution supporting what your plan is in terms of applying for this, and say that vaguely you would pledge and you would put some resources of your own in it. We're not tying the city to any specific number, but the fact that we've already allocated funds in the budget towards the tree commission for the purpose of buying trees, as well as giving us some leeway on that. This helps us in getting our those types of grants because it means that the community's committed to the program. So that's what this would do. It does not tie us to a specific number. If we do get the grant, we would have to 18 months to spend it on the priorities that we say we're going to spend it on. What we are talking about trying to do is threefold, is to one, plant trees in public areas so we wouldn't have to go on private property and like that. And we're not contemplating that, at least we're not doing it this time. There's no programmatic idea to do that. Obviously, that would have to be approved by council. Secondly, to help put together a tree survey. So what would happen is you would bid for a company to help come out and do a survey of the trees in the community and base it by soil type and the types of trees that we have so that we know how these things work. And it was interesting, a couple of years ago, the plain dealer did a story about the Cleveland surveys from the 1910s and 1920s, and there's still trees up that say, this tree was here in 1910 and was planted by so-and-so in 18, whatever, you know. So they actually put, in their surveys, they actually put tags on every tree. And I don't know that we would do that, but it was interesting to see that type of thing. Then the third part of it is to help us come up with a tree plan, a comprehensive tree plan in support of our Trillion Tree Initiative, which we would like to try to see implemented sometime this decade. So those are the three purposes of the funding. And this resolution basically supports the commission's grant and pledges that there would be some amount of money associated with the grant.
So any restriction related to species?
There is not, to my knowledge. Obviously, the species that are illegal, we could not go towards, but that would be something that we would make that decision on, what type of species. So the idea behind putting a tree survey together and match to the soil is to find out what are the best trees for the best soil. And so we are going to try to accomplish that with this grant.
so that we can answer your question.
Now, you said that it would be on public areas, but part of our recent direction that we tried to go was to put it over on private and keep it out of tree lawns. So
because
what kind of other public areas would possibly, you're talking about the parks?
Ron is here. So the reason we did say private is because we don't have access to people's properties right now. We have not considered any ordinance that would further what you just talked about. And we could only order about 30 or so trees with the amount of money that would be available. So we just didn't think it would make sense to try to put them on 30 lawns. We thought maybe in the center of town, in that green area where we used to have home days, or maybe down in other public spaces, down on like 17 and 21 in that area down there. But we haven't made a decision on that as yet. And any type of recommendation, we obviously will bring to them the administration, the council, so you will have input on that.
Any kind of optimistic goal as far as grant amount, or what you can apply for?
As much as we can.
Hey, I would just say, yeah. I mean, so one of the good things about this grant is that, you know, once you get it, if you're doing a good job, then you get it again. And then there's state grants you get, and there's some federal grants, but they're a little bit restrictive to the type of community, so we may not qualify for some of the federal dollars that are out there, because they do have some restrictions as to, you know, the age of the community in terms of the tree population, and they've got some racial components that say they want to repopulate in predominantly African-American areas, which we don't have a lot of African-American particularly areas or neighborhoods in the community, so I don't know that we would qualify for those things. But the state one, we probably would qualify for. So, yeah, our hope is we'll be buying over the course of this decade thousands of trees and getting them planted in town. I don't think that is an overly ambitious number.
I'd like to see how else, real quick, I know Ron, we thought one of the things he wants to do is start trying to plant trees in people's backyards instead of the front, because they get interfered with the wires, and then also help with some of these water situations in the backyard.
It's a recommendation we'll make to the council at some point in time, but yeah.
No, you say policies. I mean, because all the trees that are on the tree line are in the way, they're so disfigured now. It takes away from the beauty of what trees are supposed to have. And you'll look and see half a tree or a tree that's, you know, yeah, like a bring that's been split down the middle. Or, I mean, it's real. So I'd like to see, I don't know if there's dwarf trees or something else that can be planted that don't grow quite as high and get into the wires now, but it seems like it's an ongoing problem, you know, with the power lines and everything. So,
no question about it. Again, I think what Jim mentioned from Ron is very important, because we got a lot of backyard flooding problems, and so trees help mitigate that. It may not alleviate entirely, but it certainly mitigates. So,
yeah, that's particularly that varieties of the willows in particular, but there are obviously other trees that they can't stand to have wet feet.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I mean, I know residents that ended up with extra water and had trees dying simply because of an increased quantity of water because of a change in the terrain.
That will all be part of the tree plan that we would like to present to the mayor and council, you know, hopefully next year.
So, Jim, you'd like to see a vote on this, right?
If it's possible to have a vote on it today, that would help our cause, and we can give it to Annie.
Very good. I'll make the motion to suspend the rules.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
I make a motion to approve this resolution.
So moved.
Debbie, call the roll, please.
Sure. DeGeronimo?
Yes.
Grindel?
Yes.
Tagliani?
Yes.
Tracus?
Aye.
Roberta?
Yes.
Walchanowicz?
Yes.
Very good. Thank you, Jim. Resolution number 2023-4 has been approved. And now we move on to the program where Emily, you and once we get Ron back in here.
One thing just on over the major water line break on Puzzle Valley.
Yeah, in the Seven Hills.
Yeah, it's I-77.
Oh, right.
And it's crippled and compromised all four lanes. So that's what Ron's working on right now. We're trying to stabilize situation. Happened this morning. We did a lot of traffic diversion, and water department came out within the hour. Now we're trying to assess the situation, what we have to do to ourselves back in position. But traffic was completely shut off for a while.
Is that east or west of the 77?
It's right along 70 by 77.
Oh, okay.
They haven't found the leak yet either.
I did hear it on the news, yeah.
We had to divert traffic on 77 and to the residential neighborhood. So it's, and turn traffic around at 21, so it's been a challenging day. Keep you posted.
Jim, does that grant, I'm rewinding just a little bit, does that grant include anything related to watering or other care of the? Because the reason I ask is today I walked Lower Brookside down to Ranley and back, and there were a number of the new trees were dead. The ones that were put in with that road project was not that long ago, it was 3 years ago.
No, to my knowledge, it does not. It could be whatever it is that we want to ask for, but those are the three areas where they suggest that the grant is best used.
Yeah, I was surprised. There were three dead trees all within, very close to each other.
Very unfortunate.
Maybe I planted them. That's what happened.
You got a black shirt on me, another black top.
My shoulder.
Behind you.
Yeah.
Okay,
now it's like that. I'll approach my front problem is there wasn't stipulation put in for the homeowners to water them. If you don't water trees, they die. People who did water their trees are alive. But it's a matter of customer and resident awareness. What you do, and what Mr. Riley said about planting outside the tree lawn, you avoid a whole lot of, you get a lot bigger switch of trees. The number of trees you can plant grows by the hundreds, and you don't have the problem with Ohio, Bell, and everybody else can whack in the thumb zone and train them into the things that are on 21 right now. And say, I think that's embarrassing to see what those trees look like.
Yeah.
But by planting them a little further back. I did this on a test project on Cedar Road in Beechwood. But we moved it, actually moved trees from the tree lawn to back 20 feet to the other side of the thing. It feels like, it's nice we have trees on the street now. You don't see the people drive by, they don't see. So I think this whole idea of moving toward getting, tree lawn should be utility corridor. It shouldn't be tree lawn. It's a horrible place to plant a tree.
We plant on their utility lawns, right?
Yeah, and what the utilities did to the our trees this year was horrible.
So, I have a question. You know, we've been fine with it, but if we were to decide to take trees from tree lawns and put them in the residents' front yard, are we going to give the residents the option whether or not they want that?
That's what we've done in the past. When we've done a street project, the city engineer is the one that involves people if they're interested in having a tree or not having a tree or having it replaced.
So you're talking about maybe citywide trying to replace those trees and put them in the yards?
Well, you know, we're, you know,
it might make a lot of sense, by the way.
I mean,
what you have to do is you have talked to the homeowner the year before so the nursery can have the trees for you. You can't just go out like tomorrow and get any tree you want. You really have to give the nurseries about a year. You're in and start
making it with this year.
But more the selection is tremendous.
I mean, if you go.
As Jim talked about before, is that the bigger the tree, the further away from the street, the more canopy you can get per tree. So you get a lot more bang for your buck if you plant a larger tree in a bigger space.
I mean, it was in the fall or earlier, a couple months ago, when they were trimming the trees on Drexel Road. I mean, they just, they're not trimming trees, they're just hacking trees and making trees in the center of them. They all look terrible.
Well, that's why we changed our policy in Lafayette to move into the private property to think long term.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah, same
thing. Yeah, let's say off tree lawn, whatever you had to do.
It's so much better.
Yeah.
I'm sure the utilities are happier too.
Oh, yeah, it helps everybody.
Yeah, of course. But the other piece of that is making sure that the residents who will be getting the tree the next year are well familiar with what the expectations are to keep the thing alive.
That's public relations. We've got to do that.
Absolutely.
Well, I just had another comment. A few years ago, I replaced all trees on a number of streets in Maple Heights, where we took out solar maples and we went and planted trees on the tree lawn, behind the tree lawn.
and they don't get trimmed anymore, and they don't fall on houses, on cars anymore, and everybody's a lot happier, and the street looks really much nicer. Not having a center hack out like Chris said is really not very, very nice.
I guess the group is aesthetically pleasing, and then you right. have all that, and it's actually just the opposite.
Right.
Very good. Well, Emily, we all turn the floor over to you.
I know Ron had to step out, but I think that if we're Amber and I, we can cover everything. So from my perspective, we'll have data into the season last year and projections for the future. So for those of you in the room, if you look at the 11x7 sheets of paper that I handed out. So last year we had 762 participants as part of the snow removal program. If you look at the
Emily, hang on just a second.
Yes.
Dave, would it be okay to invite Emily to come closer? So in other words, it'll be easier for the
oh sure.
Why don't you
join us at the table?
Come join us at the table. It'll be easier for the owl to hear you and
okay. Chris is blocking me from the owl. He's enjoying it.
Sorry. Husky.
Chris is the owl.
There's Roebuck's pants. You could be huskies. When you were a kid, did you wear huskies?
You're the owl keeper maker. Very good.
So again, for the 22-23 snow removal season, we had 762 participants in the program. If you look at the next set of data to the immediate right, it breaks down the participants by age. And then if you look to the right again, it breaks it down by age ranges. And the reason we did the age range was in conversations last year, there was some discussion about potentially at some point in the future adjusting the age for participants of the program. So we broke it down by, again, age range there based on some of the conversations that we had. This year we did have 7 people on HEAP and or PIP to qualify them for a discounted rate. The residents paid $25 for snow removal if you were on HEAP or PIP and provided the appropriate documentation that brought the cost down to $15 for the season. One thing that we did last year was try to project the estimated number of participants for this past season, and so looking at sportsmen pulling that information, we have 90 residents, not necessarily households, but 90 residents who will be turning 60 prior to or during the snow removal season for 23-24.
90.
Yes. So again, those are individuals. That does not mean that there aren't multiple people within the household turning that, or that all of those 90 people's households qualify for snow removal if they have, you know, children living with them or things of that nature, but it's just our best way to guesstimate the number of projected households. So again, so you're looking at obviously almost 100 households, potentially 100 more households next year. So that's just kind of the overall data there. One thing that we're really happy about in community services was last snow season, we proactively mailed every eligible resident or past participant a snow removal application. And so just for some perspective about how well that worked out, for the 21-22 season, we had almost 200 applicants for the program after the deadline had already passed. This year for the 22-23 snow removal, we only had 42. So that was tremendously helpful. And that's for individuals that, you know, some of those individuals will be people who didn't turn 60 until midway through the snow removal season, and so they can't fill an application until then. So we're really happy with how being proactive benefited us on the administrative side, and so certainly something that we'll continue to look at moving forward. And so at that point, I'll turn it over to Dennis. Dennis,
real quick.
Yes.
Talk about the 90.
Yes.
Of new people coming in.
Yes. So the best way for us to estimate how many potential people is we can run a patron report in Sportsman for any individuals that are currently 59 that could be turning 60 in the next snow removal season.
You see, we have 90 59-year-olds?
We do have 90 59-year-olds.
What the heck was going on in 1963, guys?
In the system.
You heard of the baby boom?
Well, I see these. Those numbers, yeah.
So again, these are 90 individuals. So there could be two 59-year-olds living together, and it could be one household. But doesn't it count the number of households? And then all of these households may not be eligible based on who else lists with them, but I'd rather provide you with an overestimate of what's potentially could have come our way as opposed to trying to fine-tune that information and then give you an underestimate of that.
Thank you.
So then if we went up to, just for hypothetical, went to 65, then potentially it'd be maybe, I know some of those that are in the 62 to 64 range will be turning 65, so they qualify, but
correct.
Yeah, we'd probably be eliminating maybe not more than 150, 160 people.
Correct. So if we went based on this information, if we bump, let's just use this, right? So if we went up to 65, you'd eliminate 101 households from that. Mm-hmm.
So originally when this program started, how did we come up with the age of 60 and above? And what year did that happen? We know.
That I can ask.
It wasn't always 60. I think we lowered it.
We have lowered it.
Yeah. So 65 at first, and then they went down to 60 in the 1990s or early 2000s, but I don't know. Whatever the effective date of the legislation was is when they changed that to 60. That was the only thing that was changed in the legislation, so we could find that out.
Well, the only reason I'm asking is, I mean, retirement age is a lot different these days. People are working a lot longer. So like one of our big numbers is 158 between the ages of 65 to 69. And there's still a lot of folks that are still working, which, you know, if you're still working, you're still capable of hiring a contractor to plow your driveway and not benefit a $50 plow your driveway all winter long program.
And something for council to keep in mind, since we do call this
25.
Because we do call this a senior snow removal program, the collective age of the senior in the city is considered 60. So if we have, if we want to call it a senior snow removal program, that may just impact how we look at us to find a senior.
That's the senior Buckeye card is 60 years old from the state law.
Yeah. Same with the rec center if you bypass there, same for our drive through lunches.
It does track state law.
How many times were they pulled out last year? Three or four times?
Two.
Yeah, yeah. That's early in the year, wasn't that early?
December 23rd, right?
You can see the sheet.
It's from my stuff that's more than my.
Dennis, do you want to take council through the sheet that you put together?
Okay. You know, basically, I think I made a email to all council a summary of the program cost for the last 9 years.
My email's been down for a week. She has my phone and my iPad currently.
That's a good thing, it's like real paper.
Right?
Please.
Right.
Well, that's one of the things Ohio law wants you to go paperless.
But according to
you, mail you up.
Bring to Government Day and Arbor Day, a little person said not all papers made from trees.
I saw that. Some of it's made of bamboo.
So theoretically, like the question I asked, since legally 60 is considered senior, and we have senior snow plowing, there is no way of changing our age limits.
So I wouldn't say. Councilman Trigas, please correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think it's a matter of the legality of it. I think it's just the formality. That's the age that 60 is used. So I think in terms of the program, I think we have the ability to adjust the age to whatever it is. I'm just saying when we refer to seniors, we use our programs at the rec center. 60 is kind of the established age that we chose. So
there was a method for that.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah.
Sure.
But not that that prohibits us from doing anything here. I think I know, speaking for Ron and Dennis specifically, you know, our goal today, and Dennis will walk you through the numbers and the bid spec, is we really want to make sure that we're proactively going out the bids significantly earlier than we were in the past. As you may recall, we had to go out the bid twice in terms of routes to have enough contractors to accommodate the number of routes that we have as part of this program. And so really wanting council's support at minimum to just be able to go out to bid as soon as possible.
Sorry about this. I print things out, my daughters yell at me. You know, basically, I just passed out as a summary of cost for the last 9 years. It kind of serves two purposes. First of all, it shows the trend that these costs are going up, and last year there was a considerable jump. Also, it does give the statistics for number of call-outs. You know, in 2014, we had our most. which was 12. 2015 and last year, there were only two call-outs. When you look at 2022, you know, the cost per per contract period, that's what we spent for that whole period. The contract runs from November 1st to April 30th. And just for clarification, the cost per event for that year does not double. The reason being the first call-out, one of the vendors missed a whole route, so we received a $2,000 credit. I think the trend is, and I think this year, well, last year when we went out for bid the first time, I had contacted 12 vendors that had participated in the past. We only had four that responded, and we were able to award 14 out of 21 routes. We did a second bid, and that time we were only able to award an additional three routes. And then finally, with council's approval and urging, we did an informal bid process just to cover those last remaining routes. And those routes came in at $47.50 a driveway. So I think that the trend's going to be, and I think that, you know, the contractors are well aware of, you know, supply and demand. And, you know, I anticipate costs going up again this year. I know in the past we've had been some discussions even about expanding the service to, you know, possibly, you know, shoveling the walkway and stuff like that. And I've contacted a number of contractors the last couple of years, and, you know, they said, you know, it wouldn't be possible. You know, look, financially, we couldn't pay what the service would cost.
Thanks for the sheet, Dennis. That's great information.
And I also, with the email that went out earlier today, I just included our specifications that we ran last year. And I guess we're looking to get some direction from council. I know there had been some consideration in the past of lowering the snowfall wall from 4 inches to 2 inches when there'd be a call out. And I think that's probably about that was the only major change, correct? But we also had talked about shortening the window the contractors have to get all the routes covered, you know, going from 16 to 14 or even possibly 12. But one of my just my thoughts is that if we start shortening that window, we're going to run into coverage problems, and it will only increase the cost because, like, you know, contractors got to kind of maximize their income over that period of time.
So, Dennis, that second column, cost per contact, that's total amount we paid to the contractors for the period?
Yes, that is correct.
If we want to say the residents are paying $25 times 762, it's about $20,000. With those, we have a net cost to the city. And there's also additional administrative costs the city incurs, but if we took off...
Correct.
18 or 20 grand each year, then that's kind of your net exposure.
Correct. Right. But yeah, I mean, last year was an exceptional year for the amount of snow. We didn't really get that much snow. You know, I think probably the average would be five or six calls. Remember, you might be addressing it. Five or six calls?
Last year?
No, last year we had two, but I mean, a typical year?
Well, you have them right there, don't you?
Yeah.
It's like four or five.
I saw we had four to call out before. You know, it depends on this. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. By the way, the age was changed in 2014.
Who's 69? And last year we did take the parking lots in the center of downtown. We took those and they're being handled in-house.
So, you know, looking at the costs last year of $47,000 to the contractors, it's like a 60-40 split, city, residents, but it's all based on price and snowfall. If you go down that 2014 year, it would have been like an 80-20 split. So just again, you know, we have other programs. We have the public-private partnerships. We've talked some 70-30. So we're, you know, it's not 95-5. It's 60-40 some years, it's 80-20 some years, but that cost per plow is really the big swing from
from last, from 21 to 22. I mean, to see a price double, and that's the, I think, the weakest part of this program is we're relying on the contractors. If we go out to bid, if nobody responds and there is no program, then that's it. So, and if we only get a couple people, we could be getting gouged, and that's it. You know, we're just not getting the participation from the contractors.
I have a question about that and a point about that. So I've been of the opinion that one of the reasons that, like this last year, you know, because the year before there had been these issues, I think our ordinance that reads that you have one up and one down is creating more problems than it's worth. And the reason I say that is because I think the time involved for a contractor isn't substantially different to actually clean the driveway. We're calling them back because the residents are unhappy with some of that. I think if we remove that provision and, or maybe try to bid it both ways, so let's just see what we can get. I have a hunch that that's one of the problems we're creating. Through legislation, we've said they could only go up once and down once. We create those ice wall dams by people's garages and by their doors. They get concerned about it. They call them back. The vendors are like, hey, I'm just not coming back. I mean, it's too much time and effort for me. So if you make it easier for them, just clean the driveway to the best that you can, it might actually save us some money to do that type of thing. And but it's in legislation, so it would have to be adjusted in legislation. But I think that's one of the problems based on what we were talking about last October and or September and October was, hey, they're getting called back a few times. And, you know, so I think that's one of the reasons. So maybe our own ordinance, I think, is creating more, you know, I think the idea was to save time and money. I'm not sure they did that.
Well, you know, and I will, if I can add to that, there are some contractors, and Marie, you can get, you know, they do more than the two pallets. The guy from Dirt Works, you know, he takes it edge to edge, and he really does a good job.
I was going to mention Dirt Works. Like, he's one person. He doesn't have anybody else that is working for him. And Dennis will tell you, he's the one that picked up a lot of the extra routes for us. And then I remember Ron saying that he wanted to cut the time from 16 to 14 or 12. And I got a call from the guy from Dirt Works and says, you know, I'm one man. That's impossible. I'm doing over 100 driveways. So I think a lot of stuff needs to be reworked.
And on the rebid, when we put it out, Dirt Works did bid some additional drive routes. But he was going to have to hire some of the work out, so consequently he was bidding $100 to $150 a driveway.
All right.
So. I think that what will happen going forward, I think we're going to see these prices increase into the further. I think the contractors that do work for us are aware of the struggle that we're having to find contractors willing to do the work, old supply and demand, but I think it's throughout, business in general. I don't care if you're a landscaper, snow plow, or house painter,
Try to get somebody in the healthcare industry these days. So the state's putting $4 billion into just upping the prices for contract healthcare workers, $4 billion a year. Because they want to try to get it up to like $16 to $18 an hour. So we're not alone.
And again, I think our goal kind of walking out of this meeting is to ensure that Council of Oquio is going to bid with the parameters currently set, which means 4 inches, 16 hours, estimating, based on last year's 762 driveways. There's not necessarily any decisions about the program that have to be made specifically in this meeting, but just reviewing the parameters and us wanting to go out to bid earlier so that we know what we're working with and that decisions can be made after the fact to do that.
See, I feel
like to go out to bid with the program.
We'd like to go out for bid in June. We have the bid results back. We could, share that with council. Kind of know where we stand with the amount of contractors, there's people that are available, what the supply is going to be. And then, say that we don't get enough of response to cover the program, then we can get with council and find out how this, council would like to try to make adjustments to make it work.
Dennis, can you confirm, when we went to bid last year?
September.
September. September, so looking to do this.
We bid in September, we bid October again.
So the question, council, is do we change the age, do we change the cost, and how are we going to manage the overall budget for this program? I don't think we're going to change the 4-inch minimum.
No.
And I don't think there's a consensus on that. A 16-hour call-out, that's pretty much works. But the cost of the program, if we had 6 or 8 pushes, would have been pretty crazy.
Do we know what type of funds we have left in that program?
Allocated what? 250?
It's 400,000 something.
I think that's definitely what happened.
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
Yeah, but we added because of these concerns, and again, it's not sell as much.
You know, moving forward, I mean, I know it was mentioned last year. This is an election year. A lot of us aren't going to want to make any major changes.
Never easy.
So, you know.
Always an election year.
I mean, moving forward, I mean, it's been a program that the city's had for a long time. I mean, maybe we as council need to, you know, appropriate more money for the fund, for the program. You know.
What can we do? I mean, Marie, to make it more attractive for contractors, that's the, I mean, if we don't get more people to bid this, the price is going to keep going up and we're just going to be capped. You know, if we can't manage it well, it's, you know, no matter what we budget for it, is there a problem? Like, I think of my house on Sunset would be terrible for a snowplow driver. It's just a weird turnaround. I should not be eligible for this. Are there other people? Do we, you know, we let anybody in the program, or could you let a driver just say, hey, I'll do the street, but I'm not touching that house over there?
With the second bid that went out, we did allow the contractors to take exceptions and to say that they would not, then they could do it for a number of reasons.
I'm sorry.
But they were then filed internally.
Hillside was one that we struggled to get somebody to bid on because of the length of the driveways.
Yeah, so if there's something like that as a homeowner, I'm sorry, just, you know, you can't participate in this program.
Yeah, and you know, I think something that we should know is, I know that, you know, there's always a lot of complaints whether or not where our contractor pushes the snow, or hey, you know, we're leaving snow 4 feet, 3 feet from the drive, from the garage door. I got a hump I got to drive out when I'm backing out. You know, I think, just so we would know, I think it would be a good idea if we were to be able to take that information, put it in a document, so then we know how many complaints we're getting, and then what is our extra cost by sending a service department employee out to replow the driveway. Yeah. And on the back end of it in the springtime, because I saw it for weeks, how much are we paying our service department employees to go back and fix yards that these contractors have screwed up? So not only are we ditching, you know, putting out that $47,500 for snow plowing, we're paying our own employees to fix grass, to replow driveways, you know, and these guys are $25-30 an hour.
I was going to, you could probably add 10 or 15% to this cost to say, you know, the overall from billing, admin, callbacks. The only call I got last year, because the it got plowed, the driveway, but then the sidewalk plow goes, and that leaves two humps, and they got to come back to get
I think that would be all good information for us to know, you know, just
that's helpful.
Because that's the true cost of the program, not just what we see. Right, we're just seeing this. You know, we're not seeing what Marie's, you know, taking in and then sending somebody out to fix those problems.
In 2023, just under $200,000 was budgeted for the program.
Just under?
Yeah, it was $197,536, and I'm not sure why it was such an odd number, but we probably had to change it to a balanced out of account, so we probably moved some money around.
So you know, obviously I started here in 19, so, you know, a couple of those years, like 15, where you're at 17,000, you're at 32,000, you know, the funds that were appropriated for that year of snow plowing, at the end of the year, if there was funds that were still available, would that go back into the general fund, or do we keep that in that and keep rolling? I mean, does it make sense to...
Yeah. You know, if a PO was open and there was some funds remaining on it, we would use that up. But I think Maggie has gotten away from that and start, you know, just closing those POs out, like the mayor said. It just goes back into the general fund.
So at our company, if there's a bad deal out there, a lot of people refer to it as a snowplow contract, because that's the generic term where it's win-lose based on something you don't control. If it snows a lot, we lose. If it doesn't, we win. Look, we won
it's
it
very
in
fitting for this.
23. And we call we avoid hits whenever we can. It's out of our control.
Now, how do you hedge that?
You control what you can. You sign up for what you can control, and you bet on yourself. So if there's another way to do it, to not say it's, I mean, we incur the cost per push as a city. If we could turn around and then invoice our customers at the end of the year, still make it simple, and say, you know, the $25 you're in, that's you're in for the pot, that's your lets us bid, we'll service it, and at the end of the year, based on pushes, we allocate some other costs and say, this was the cost we got, we bid, we got gouged this year, sorry, it's $40 per push this year, we'll charge you half of that, and you know what, it went out six times. That would save you from these black swan events of $100,000 and end up being a 90-10 split. I mean, you could charge differently versus ours. If we bump the thing up $10 a year, it still wouldn't save you from, you know, $100,000 a year.
Right. There isn't a minimum fee that could make a significant difference in the program. It would be worth it, you know, to increase it because of the pushback you would get just from the residents.
So my thing, like Jim said, about, you know, how it's one up, one down, you know, if we change those parameters and tell them, hey, you know, you got to try to clean as much snow from the garage door as possible and you got to clean the whole driveway, that $32.45 is going to inflate substantially. Okay. Because these guys got so many driveways to do, they're trying to get in and get out, and now they're going to take 20 minutes per driveway.
In the proximity to the garage door, a lot of the contractors, and I get it, they're afraid to go too close, because they don't want to damage the door. They don't want to get too close to cars because, you know, be it, you know, legitimate damage or...
Do we have that specified anywhere where the resident can see, this is why we don't go that far?
Yes, it is.
Well,
in there.
Then maybe, you know, if it is in there...
Why is not in the brochure? So in the brochure that we mail out with every application, it specifies the parameters of the program. So the one, you know, the one up and down within certain garage, or certain feet of the garage, is for emergency clearance only. That all those things are laid out in the brochure, but not necessarily the why to what you're saying.
Okay, so is it stated also in there if a resident wants that little bit of extra clean, that the city is not liable if something happens to their garage door? Because they are stating.
Correct. The waiver that they filled out as part of SAR removes the city of liability of those pieces.
But the question is, are we going to stick to that, or are we going to help the resident out fix their garage door?
I would say the term is probably to go fix that. I can't speak to that myself.
So well, we might lose insurance coverage. That's what happened.
Councilman Wolchanowicz, in the form itself, it does say that the, you know, insignificant damage to the lawn, that it is the property owner's responsible to repair. But, you know, it doesn't matter how much damage they call Marie, and Marie takes care of it.
And it does state that they're looking, if a resident is looking for more service than the city has provided, they should seek their own contractor.
But we're not getting away from that stuff. It states in there, but we're continuing to fix everything. I mean,
the rules of the program have not been enforced.
Well, yeah, I mean, they can sign any waiver they want. We're still, you know, it's like we don't have it because we're still going back and fixing and cleaning and.
Correct.
So.
Well, that goes with, and that goes with the deadline too. I mean, even though we had a hard deadline, there was still a chunk of people that didn't follow through. Mm-hmm. And you said some of them would have turned the age during the season, which but not all
not
50
all 40,
of them.
No.
So, I mean.
I look at this program as a benefit. It's one of everything else is nice. You know, I'm protected by my safety forces. If anything goes wrong, I call the fire department and go to the park. This is my house. This actually helps me in my house. So I think that it's not going to be inexpensive to do that. And I understand. Thank you.
That's the flyer that did you mail these out?
We did. We mailed out the application to eligible participants. But half of them is in the second 1,000 people.
I just think, you know, let's see what we come up with. I mean, I would think we want to take that out of legislation only to give you more flexibility. If you want to bid it that way, that's up to you. But I mean, I think that's limiting in a way. And I think that scares away some of the contractors.
Well, and I was going to say, you know, not just is the cost per drive potentially can go up, it's also going to cut your contractor list even lower than we had.
That's not going to do it.
So I mean, all of this it's a tough situation for everybody because you know you want to keep the residents in mind, but we also have to keep us, the city, in mind. You know, and there's got to be, you know, you got to draw that line in the sand somewhere.
Absolutely.
So
have we brought in the contractors and I'll hold them about any of these issues?
We did last in preparation for the snow season.
And what was their thoughts in terms of, I mean, obviously, if you can't find personnel, you're going to charge more. So, I mean, that's just reality of it. But
I think my takeaway as a Marine, I mean, anybody else chime in, you know, 16 hours works for them, no real issue with the 4 inches. Really, their biggest piece of feedback is the interaction they have with residents, the negative interaction that they have with residents being yelled at, being blocked from exiting a resident's driveway because they weren't happy, a resident wasn't happy with having a flag. It's really it's the treatment that they receive from residents that really prohibits them from wanting to continue with the program.
Yeah, but he came back and did my drive.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I had a resident last year, and it's a big, crowded street, and there was a pretty good pile of snow at his apron, and he decided that he was going to leave for the day and got stuck. So he called me as a council person, and I went over there, and he pitched me up a storm about how they left the snow in his driveway. I can't get out of my driveway. So, you know, I went there with my truck. I had to shovel him out. I pushed him out, and then I cleaned his driveway for him, and you don't even get a thank you call. I would have been happy with a thank you. I didn't even get that. So.
No, I guess I'm
not even a contractor.
Our next question is you know, would council like us to bid this as we bid it last year? You know, hopefully get, you know, the bids will close sometime in June. We could get council that information, you know, late June, early July. And then council could make a decision, hey, did we get enough of a response that we can cover the program, or do we need to make adjustments in, you know, how to proceed?
So, I'm just going to keep talking. My thought is nothing changes. I would not make any changes to the program that will benefit our resident any more than they're already being benefited. Because of what our cost is, like, you know, you're saying, let's clean the whole driveway and all that. I mean, for what they're paying, to me, it just doesn't make sense to go and out. Because it's going to, you know, they're still going to pay the same. Our contractors are going to cost, it's going to cost us more, or we're going to get less contractors that are going to have time to do, you know, a 10 or 15 minute push per house.
Just remember why this program was started was to get the safety forces
right.
Two passes.
Yeah.
emergency access, but it didn't matter how much snow was by the garage door or on stone or on steps, it was access so the emergency vehicle could get in the driveway and assist our resident in an emergency situation. And if they're out of town, people think that there's someone there. Right? So that's the genesis of why we do this. It's embellished into, morphed into something much greater. The cost is reflective of that. So we need to find out, we need to search the shake a tree and see how many more people with landscapers that would like to have a nice program. It's gonna, so maybe
I agree with you. Let's do it the way we've done it and see what we get, and then if we have to make changes, we definitely
yes, Mayor, but I might add something. I don't think it's the cost that's really the problem with the program. I think going forward, it's going to be finding enough contractors to service it.
Maybe we, at least if we do it in June, we'll find that out and we can make some changes.
Well, it gives us more planning, right? I mean, last year starting in September was very tight. So, I mean, I can go along with the 16 hours, I can go along with the 4 inches, I can go along with all those pieces of the puzzle. The only thing I would say is, I still don't like those 50 people, not all of them are, you know, but it seems to me that if you don't get it in by a certain date, there should be some sort of a penalty.
So we did have a discussion and in the once in your mind about assessing a $25 late fee, if you will, which the collective group said that we should use it to encourage people to register on time.
You did a great job of that.
To go from 200 to 42, that's pretty good. I'll take that.
All late fees for the streets and sidewalks,
Dennis, I think going to bed early will give us plenty of time to make changes. Have we ever gone better? I guess, would there be a drawback saying I'm not someone goes, I don't know what I'm doing this year. Is it too early?
It would go out late August, early September.
So I'm just going to throw this out there. Have we ever contemplated on, during, we get a group of, I know in Middleburg Heights, they used, they were four-wheel drive pushmans, and they had part-time city employee, part-time employees that would come in on snow events. They'd get in a Cushman, they'd get their list of senior driveways, and then they did the senior driveways. They didn't deal with contractors, they didn't deal with any of that stuff, and that kept their cost down.
I don't think they had the number of participants, though. I think that it's just like Brecksville. Brecksville has, probably under 100.
25 drivers.
Yeah.
So instead of their, it's a set of parameters.
Last year, Frank Allega, typically, he's been telling us, he goes, I'll do all the driveways. Last year, he was limited the amount of driveways he would take on because he could not find the help other than his family.
Right.
And then, Frank has, he has an excellent setup because he uses skidsters.
I know all the community, almost all the communities have some kind of program one way or the other, but or a number of them.
What they do is they will put together a list of recommended contractors, but the residents contract with them.
I see.
Vice Mayor, Amber did a lot of research on that going into last summer renewal season, so she can share what she has.
Yeah, I looked at quite a few different cities, Berea, Brooklyn, Copley, Cuyahoga Falls, Medina, Mineral Lake, Northfield, Southern Hills, Solon, Streetsboro, and Strongsville, just to kind of look at what they do for their programs, what we can kind of implement. A lot of them are income-based programs.
That's why they don't have
the volume that we have. And a lot of communities also enforce their deadline. Now, for example, Seven Hills. Seven Hills, when they call, my counterpart actually changes his voicemail to say, essentially, this is not, don't quote me on this, but the deadline has passed. Sorry.
And they don't take any now.
The prime deadline and after that, they're.
They'll be knocking on the mayor's door.
At least have pay.
It makes it more difficult to know what the loads are. Right? It just makes it more difficult.
I was calling on Sunday.
I did.
Somebody in the mayor, they wanted to get forward, so they moved the mayor.
Right.
No, I think the mayor's coming home last night, when we do that, I think it's, whatever decisions council makes should be unanimous in what that is. Because that's the only way that we can all implement those changes together, is if everybody's united on them.
Well, except if somebody's term limited out.
Still united.
I can't even take advantage of the.
But not challenge the term yet.
I can't boot around when you're still struggling with this.
Yeah.
Goodbye, I want my $20,000.
Yeah, that's right.
But she's the one that benefits from this negotiation.
It's either you or Polly, what do I want to do?
So you guys would not be in favor, a true up invoice, a spring based on a rate, I mean, is that out of line based on everything else we paid for?
That would be the most economic spend, but just, yeah, have a minimal fee, but then based on how many times you call out a year.
If we had the price per plow in July, you'd say in September, this is the price we got. This is what you're going to expect to pay based on number of push, this is what we're paying, we're sharing the cost, that way we would avoid.
Maybe similar to the joint project we're having to deal with the utility.
That's a lot more work on the administrative end, I think the problem that you're going to run into is that people will not pay.
They will not pay.
Do you want to sit there for 2 minutes after spring project?
Next year, then you're out of compliance.
We have a pool in another street project, and I think let's just keep it the way it is.
Do you want to sit there for 2 more years?
Listen, this is where I'm trying to avoid the discussion of how are we going to fund this in another year, so.
I just want to take care of it for.
It's a good idea.
And it doesn't have to be everybody, if it's 80 and above, leave it alone, if it's.
No, that's another, that brings up another question, I mean, is there a way?
Straight, it's no program's got more.
You know, is there a way to adjust pricing by age group?
It's an ordinance, it's $25 flat fee, so I think as long as.
Well, that ordinance could be.
Last time I checked, the council.
We're going to rewrite ordinance. That's like I'm saying, you know, to me, like, you know, 70 and up, $25. 62-69, it's a different type of pay scale, because you're still, you know, a lot of you are still working. You know, you might be in good enough shape to want to still lower, or, you know, that could be another way.
What about if you have a tiered program based on the number of callouts? It could protect us from having a, you know, a bad year of like 14 callouts, okay? But then we'd have to, you know, charge upfront, whatever, if it'd be like, you know, if we have 3 callouts, it's 25, if we have 6 callouts, it's 50.
The guy didn't come, I'm not being.
Well, yeah, I mean,
It's simple now, everything's simple right now, it's across the board.
Again, I think anything from putting a definition in sportsman and making it happen is absolutely feasible. It's just anything, if you're collecting payment after the fact, you may not get it.
And to your point, Councilman Durango, you're better off collecting a larger fee upfront and then refunding on use funds, because that's like, right? We had 1 year where the snowplow didn't get called out at all, I don't remember what year, and everyone was refunded, and
I think you're fine with inflation, people are not in a position to be able to do some of this stuff. This is a benefit of that.
It's a great vote, no doubt about it.
Well, but if I heard people voted against the school because they're like, they just don't want to afford $100 or whatever it might be. And he said, I understand, everything's 35-40% more than it was 2 years ago.
And again, the purpose of our conversation is really just to ensure that we can go out to bid in June with the current parameters. As Dennis said, we can come back to council with what we've received and then discuss about what we want to make forward, moving forward.
Because we're bidding, not affecting people.
Correct.
It's only affecting our analysis.
And you can reach it.
For the.
They got plenty of time if you have to rebid.
Lieutenant, you said there's language in the bidding process if we reduce the number of driveways significantly, correct?
Yes.
And let's do that, but this will be, we'd be in a better situation to analyze, you know, what bids came back and everything and what we have to work with. And if we have to modify anything in the program, we'll have plenty of time to do that and plenty of time to explain to the residents why we're doing that. You know? And you might get, maybe some people aren't even thinking of it, but by the time we bid it last year, there's already later in the year, you might have had some.
It was typically when we, when it would be bid in the past. You know, I think bidding it a little bit earlier gives council more options to deal with going forward. The process takes basically 22 days when it's advertised, so then you would be able to get some data back to council as to, you know, what coverage we have, what the pricing is, and go from there.
So if we got the bid as soon as possible, then we'd be able to vote on this as early as July, then probably.
Yes, that's correct.
So consensus is we'll just keep everything the way it is.
I think that's probably the best kind of see what feedback we can get.
Yeah, because it's a different year. I mean, if the labor market's changed, you know, maybe we're not talking to them during the bidding process, so.
I put in his notes exactly what to do. Well, I guess maybe we decide what to have it what. Kind of like the bid same parameters. We're a little farther away from the pandemic, but then we're still in the inflation mode and everything. So, but yeah, we need to have more data to see what kind of response we get from the bid. So, do we need an open for that there? Very good.
Thank you, Council.
Very good. And we'll have our next meeting. Next is that one to resolve.
I want to make sure that the parameters for these vendors are not so strict that they, if somebody with a pickup truck can't qualify because we, our insurance regulations are so high that it's, don't want to discourage anybody from, unless council sees it differently, you don't want to discourage somebody from, trying to bid.
Right. I mean, I think we had so few bidders last year.
You know, Mayor, one thing I did either last year, you're required to take away the bid bond or bid requirement just because these smaller guys, it's a deterrent.
They can't do it.
Is there like a landscaping association you can talk to and try to see if they have people that might be interested in? The lady on my street is the president of the landscaping association. Hmm. Ohio landscaping
association. I try anyway.
Yeah, they would have people who might be.
What about in the post? Something that
I got to run by
maybe early, but it's time to
road won't open up till 5 a.m.
Look in the plan.
One lane needs direction. I'll reach out to.
Do they know what it is?
Yeah, every landscape.
They know what started.
Service in the council, city independence.
Are you sending notice out to the residents?
We're gonna do a.
But even till I guess a swift reach.
Almost the swift reach. Yeah, that might.
Most can be done again.
Most can be done. Second. Hi, John. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. He has now. Thank you, John.
Recording stopped.